Welcome to In the Garden. I'm Kelly Casey, and here is Char Char. How does your garden grow?
It's iris blooming season, Kelly, my favorite flower.
One of mine as well. I picked a scant three that actually came up in the lower garden, and they're so beautiful smelling.
Oh, I know. They have the best scent in the world.
They do. Something else is blooming right now is my Miss Kim lilac.
Oh, another good smell.
Oh, my word. The fragrance. Unfortunately, it's kind of stopped up my throat. So many fragrances at once.
Yep, it has mine too.
And the snowball bushes were wonderful until that really heavy rain.
Yes.
And then all of the snowflakes are on the ground.
That's right.
Oh, we've had some really weird weather, large dumpings of rain. But I think the farmers are probably pretty happy because they've come at a good time.
Yes. The only thing I didn't like was the wind we've had recently. Just saps the moisture that we do have, especially in pots, saps it right away.
People have to remember that too, that even if it's a mild day temperature-wise, if you have wind, that's going to dry out your plants. And I've been planting more in terracotta for some of my plants, and I'm having to water twice a day.
Right, because there's pores in the terracotta.
Mm-hmm. There certainly is. Well, so our late spring, early summer garden continues to flourish, and we hope that yours are flourishing too. And before we get into our topic today, this is very timely because this just happened to us at our home. Now, we live in a rural area, the same as Char. However, we have never had the experience that we had last night, and I want to share this with people. And I find out that it's not uncommon. And whether you live in a rural area or if you live in a regular nice neighborhood, this can happen to you. What happened is we heard from the inside of our house a blood-curdling scream. Now, we have a couple of cats, and we immediately thought, oh no, someone's in danger. We go out, and in the yard, it's completely quiet. And we can't imagine what happened. So I just thought, it sounded like a human scream. I'd never heard anything like that before, and I could not imagine. You know, raccoons are abound this time of year,
right.
And they're out at night as well. And they're always chattering and chittering and things. But no sound like I heard.
Wow.
And so both myself and my husband stood there with our ears on the alert. Our cats, their eyes are wide as saucers because I don't think they've ever heard anything like that either. And once again, this blood-curdling scream came from the area of the trees just at the edge of our property. So we finally figured it out. It was an opossum.
Oh,
now,
my goodness.
It's not unusual for them to emit a high-pitched, blood-curdling scream, and I think it's basically to keep predators away from their young or from themselves. And they have a lot of great benefits, but they also have very sharp claws, but they can be very docile, and they eat a lot of ticks, so they're very beneficial.
Hmm.
However, I did Google some things about the opossum, and I found out that local law enforcement often get calls wanting them to come right away because someone is being hurt, but they can't tell where the sound is coming from. And those in the know will ask them if they live in a rural area or if they know what an opossum sound like. And most people don't.
Right.
And you can see that online. They have kind of a watered down version of the scream, but it is only to be experienced. So if you hear a blood curdling scream after you've taken stock of everyone in your family being okay, you may chalk it up to an opossum.
Wow.
It was an eye-opening experience, Char.
I had no idea.
I hadn't either. So the next time I see one, I'm going to be much more much more reverent around it. Well, speaking of things that are unusual, we're going to talk about pests in the garden today, because with all our hard work and the time and the expense that we spend on gardening, one unfortunate downfall that can dampen even us most optimistic growers are pests. Both large and small, and that they cause damage to yards, gardens, and we also threaten to curb our enthusiasm. Now, these pests can pop up in the country as well as the city, and they can turn your plans upside down and significantly reduce the success that you deserve. The largest of my backyard munchers, and I don't know about you, Char, are deer. You know, we both live in rural areas, and deer are such frequent visitors to our yards. There is little that we have found that offers complete protection from these beautiful but hungry visitors. Now, fencing, you probably have heard, at the height of 6 to 8 feet is usually enough to keep them out. But the cost and the visual effect to your property may be a major deterrent to this option. There are a number of sprays, and I know, Char, you've seen those before on the shelves that say these will be deer deterrents. And there's applications on the market that may be effective. But whatever is recommended, you usually have to use that method frequently, as rain will wash it away, or they'll become desensitized to that smell, and they'll and they will just continue to munch.
Right.
Now, some of these preparations contain blood or predator scents, such as coyote or fox. Now, another option is planting types of flowers, especially those in the allium family. And those emit a strong odor thought to deter deer. You know, and it's really hard to encircle every tasty morsel on your yard with a barrier. And some plants that deer don't seem to eat, though, are coneflower, foxglove, and those variations with thorns, such as barberry. Now, another critter that makes their nightly rounds at our place are raccoons. And I know, Char, that you plant sweet corn every year. And these masked marauders have made quick work of stripping the ears from those stalks. Those tender sweet corn is his favorite.
I know. How do they know? How do they know when it's ripe?
I think they have a newsletter.
I think so.
You know, you discovered last year, though, that even a radio set to really loud rock music was not enough to chase
them
away.
Correct.
So through trial and error, now you found that a trio of bright floodlights.
Yep.
Directed at the patch was very effective in saving your crop. Now, this might not be practical if you have close neighbors, but it's worth a try if sweet corn meal is on your menu. Hosta and most other vegetables are also favorites of deer, so the challenge is to keep them at bay, and it is likely to test your patience. This next pest can decimate tender plants, trees, and almost any vegetation in their path. It's the lovely and sweet, fluffy cottontail rabbit. It's also a voracious eater, especially in the spring, and can destroy early spring specimens that you set out early, such as lettuce, cabbage, and pea vines. Now, hostas are another favorite, as well as tulips, lilies, and other plants with water-filled stems. But in the winter, bark from fruit trees and shrubs can be on the menu for rabbits, squirrels, voles, mice, and moles, and that can cause major damage and even result in the loss of an entire tree due to removal of its protective covering. Now, tree wraps, Char, you've found some success with those. They can be used in the winter, only in the winter, but keeping those hungry critters from tearing away the bark from the ground up to the snow line, which, as we know, continues to rise throughout the winter.
Yes.
So you do have to keep a track of that. You don't want them standing on the snow and then... and then just eating farther up.
And they can.
They can. Now, the wrap is not to be used at other times of the year because it can cause constriction and limit sunlight. Now, the gamut of home remedies are often circulated that may keep them at bay, including human, cat, or dog hair clippings, crushed mothballs, cayenne pepper, or some commercial spray applications that include predator scents, as we talked about. Coyote or fox urine are often touted as effective deterrents, but those solutions do lose potency again over time, and they're also fairly expensive to use, especially if you have a large area. Now, one treatment that I used and we discussed this spring was the addition of minced garlic, which I purchased at the dollar store, and I put those in the areas around my bulbs, such as the tulips and the hyacinth. And the dry weather we had then, just after they sprouted, meant that I only had to have two good dousings of that mix. And I even noticed that my curious cat steered clear. So I'm guessing that it probably kept the rabbits from nibbling more than they got. I had some terrible rabbits that would just take the tulip head off.
Ugh.
They didn't eat any other part of the tulip plant. They just would take the head off and leave it on the ground.
Oh.
Decapitated tulips. It was it was very not very good. You know, there also are garlic infused plugs that are supposed to keep burrowing pests such as moles and voles from consuming the roots. So that might be something to consider as long as the smell doesn't interfere with your other plant's fragrance. Once again, you're listening to In the Garden with Kelly and Char, and we're discussing garden pests today. We're talking about the things that just make us so frustrated when we're trying to grow a beautiful garden. And we're trying to offer some possible ways to keep them from eating more than their fair share of your garden produce. Now, not all of these suggestions might be right for you, but it just might help you preserve some of your precious plantings.
Mm-hmm.
All right, now let's move on to our friendly but hungry friends, the birds. Char and I are both big fans of our feathered creatures, but we both know how much they can consume. And I'm not talking just sunflower seeds.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure where the saying came from to describe someone who ate like a bird, meaning not very much. And if you grow berries, you're probably aware of how many strawberries or cherries or even plums can disappear without some intervention. I've seen a flock of hungry robins pick a patch clean before I knew it. I remember, maybe you did this too, Sharp. My grandparents used several sets of two aluminum pie plates suspended on a string to clatter in the wind.
Yep.
That seemed to work really well.
Yep.
Did you use that as well?
I use that.
You do that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And now years later, I find old CDs with the holographic images on the back. You string those on fish line above our raspberry patch. And that seems to catch the light and deters some of that sneakiness.
The aluminum pie plants, they actually make kind of a clatter, but they don't have as much shine as the CDs.
Mm-hmm.
So one makes a kind of a clatter. And
maybe
the other,
a combination.
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe a combination plate to keep those birds away. Netting is also sold for such use, but I think both of us agree that the likelihood of birds getting tangled in the net is way too great.
Yep.
And it's not a humane way to deal with the problem. But one inventive solution I have heard works fairly well for some people is for strawberry beds, and where you paint small rocks red to resemble berries. Then they're placed in the beds early in the season to discourage birds who then peck at those and find out they're not edible and they move on.
I'll have to try that.
And a very inexpensive way to do that and a very time-efficient way to do it as well is just to get a can of cherry red spray paint. You don't have to draw on leaves. Some people do. They make it look very pretty. And then just do one side, then let them dry and flip them over and do the other side.
Put them right in the bed, right?
Put them right in the bed so that they think that that's, you know, what they're looking for.
Yeah.
And if they find out enough times, maybe they won't come back.
Yeah.
I'm hoping that that would work.
I might try that.
It seems like a fun project anyway, and it might be an easier solution to keeping your crop. If your goal is to grow broccoli, cauliflower, cabbage, or Brussels sprouts, then the common cabbage worm that turns into a moth will be a pest to be kept ahead of. They lay eggs which hatch into green worms, and they can chomp holes into leaves and stems, making your veggies look more like Swiss cheese.
True.
Besides the tedious and time-consuming task of plucking the worms off one by one, some gardeners use a dusting product that's sprinkled on the plant to discourage consumption. But a more natural solution is to soak harvested crops in some salted water to release the worms from the plant. This method, however, is at the end of the growing cycle and cannot mitigate damage already done.
Right. And then, you know, with the dusting, you don't want to do that too close to the time you're actually harvesting your product.
Right, right. And if you have a small row, like of vegetables, it would be worth it to check once in a while for these worms while they're still small. Because once they've gotten established, they can ruin the heads for the cabbages and the lettuce from the inside out. Now, flying pests may be our most difficult one to conquer as they move from plant to plant and even garden to garden. One such flying villain is the Japanese beetle. Now, we've talked about this pest in previous years with Char reporting her early morning routine.
Yep.
You find the bugs on the underside of the leaves and remove them by hand before they begin another day of eating. But the holes made in the plants can quickly affect the overall health of that host plant, causing not only ugly craters, but reducing the ability of the plant to retain moisture and energy. Now, Char's mentioned a growing number of support in the use of geraniums.
Yes, and entomologists are actually looking into this. What happens is the Japanese beetle, after consuming geranium petals or leaves, it'll roll over on its back. Something in that plant causes its legs and antenna to slowly twitch, and it remains paralyzed for several hours. But then what happens, predators spot them when they're helpless and consume them. So they recover, but during that 24 hours, they can be consumed by birds and other predators.
Many stores sell traps of all kinds, but we know that the traps work by attracting the beetle with pheromones. And so it's not much of a stretch to think that such bait may also add to the number of beetles that may be in your area. So neither of us use those traps, but if any of our listeners have had success with keeping Japanese beetles from devouring your garden, please connect with us on our Facebook page.
Yes.
That's In the Garden with Kelly and Char. Now, more recent to our Zone 4 location is an influx of a similar pest, the lily leaf beetle. It's identified by its bright red body and black head and legs. Now, these newcomers have been found dining on hollyhock, hosta, lily of the valley, and even the common potato plant. You're supposed to control them by spraying natural neem oil on the young larvae and follow up every 5 days with another application. Chemicals such as seven dust, which we've mentioned, and malathion may also be used, but some of their harmful effects on pollinators are well documented. So, if possible, alternative control methods should be considered. Now, removing these by hand, as Char knows, is a common practice, but it's likely a job that you will not have very many volunteers for. I don't know about you, but the act of dropping a handful of those hungry buggers into a pail of soapy water is very satisfying.
Yep, it is.
We've covered a lot of ground in this pest program, and we wanted to advise our listeners to contact the Minnesota University Extension website to explore more pest control solutions. It's a great resource. Their site is found at extension.umn.edu. And you know what? We don't even have time for a Let's Ask Char question today, but we will save that for next week. So keep your questions coming. If you'd like to send them in, check out our Facebook page. We update that all the time. And we'll have more conversations from In the Garden next week on KDWA.
Bye, everyone.
That's our show for today. Be sure to tune in next week to In the Garden with Kelly and Char. Heard each Wednesday on KDWA Radio and online at KDWA.com.
Time is close, that rain for rain, sudden rain. I find my